All right, so this is a special episode. We are, let's see, what is today? Tuesday. Yesterday was Tuesday. Monday. Today is Tuesday the 16th of April, 2019. Yesterday, there was a big fire in France. Notre Dame caught on fire, and one of the most beautiful churches in the world largely burned, although a lot of the church is made of stone, so the forest, the main, in the nave, the main roof, burned to the ground, and that's the cause for the recording of this episode.
That's right, yeah. In case you haven't seen the images, you should definitely check them out. It's pretty much all over the news, but to me it was amazing to hear that in today's modern world of safety checks and worksite safety and all these things, that this is even possible. I don't think anyone expected Notre Dame to catch on fire and almost burn completely to the ground. But thankfully, the firemen, the brave firemen, apparently like 200 firemen at one time were working together.
Yeah, and then yeah, that's crazy.
There was a shift change and another 200 came in and they worked all through the night. It's pretty remarkable. But really, this podcast began with Notre Dame. You know, began with the story of Paul Claudel having his conversion while going to Vespers at Notre Dame. And so we both felt that it was important for us to say something about it. Because as we've been talking about beauty and architecture and what it all means, we have turned to the great cathedrals, specifically the Gothic cathedrals, as a prime example of beauty ever new, you know, of everything that the podcast stands for. And specifically of what we're trying to recover and rediscover through this podcast, through our work as architects. And so really, we just felt that it was important to talk about what Notre Dame means, why it's important, and why it needs to be restored. So I'll begin by just saying that I really think that it has been incredible to see the response that people have had for a building.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like somebody died, like a person. You see so many messages coming in from different world leaders expressing their condolences for this building. And I just don't know of another building that has ever garnered that kind of response.
I don't know of any, like, it's hard to imagine another scenario in which people from all sides of the political spectrum would come together, and it's almost like everyone forgot that they hate each other for a moment.
Yeah.
And then came together, and you know, it feels like people are on the same side for once.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And part of me, like the architect inside of me that mourns the loss of the building, says yes, it was a bad thing that it was lost, but we have this like bizarre moment in a way, like a beautiful moment, where everyone seems to care in a way that, like the, you know, the claws have been retracted.
Yeah.
And we all acknowledge that there's something that's beautiful. And well, the first thing is everyone acknowledges that the building's great. You know, there aren't some people right. who are like, yeah, it's a piece of trash, we don't care about that.
Yeah.
No, it's a beautiful thing and everyone agrees about
it's pretty
that.
Pretty universal.
And it's pretty universal, and there are all these like eulogies of the building and, you know, talking about like a vision for a hopeful future and like the French people coming together and people mourning the loss of this thing that symbolizes like in some ways the heart of French identity.
Mm-hmm.
And the height of pre-Renaissance Catholicism,
yeah,
and the faith, and the massive kind of synthesis that the building is, because it's a beautiful thing aesthetically, but also architecturally, it was one of the first and most like exuberant forms of French Gothicism. So it stood for a lot of things that weren't like at odds to one another. It was like synthesizing things that were disparate. So that the building burned down, I mean, I think that at this point they're up to like $600 million in fundraising for it. So they have a lot of money for it, which is great. And it's bad that it got burned, but I see a lot more good than bad that came out of this. There was no one that was hurt, you mm-hmm. know, and the relics were saved, and the, you know, the headline things could say like, you know, 200 people died in Notre Dame. It's like, no,
right.
the aesthetic loss was there, but in a way it's like we crucified the beauty. And now we're beginning Holy Week with a church that like you know, if anyone suffered most during the original Holy Week, it was Our Lady. And this building is dedicated to Mary.
Yeah.
So in a way, like, there's a symbolism that you don't need to really, you know, over, think too hard about there for it to be.
Yeah, and potent. It has also been interesting how many people are talking about the symbolism. I mean, there has been articles written by people all over the place. You know, whether it's Bishop Barron or
did he write one? I haven't read his yet.
Yeah, he posted a video online where he just talks about how this could be very much a sign of the times or a symbol for what the church is going through and how it is an opportunity to have a new beginning.
Yeah, totally.
I have very much mixed feelings. I think I agree definitely there's a lot of good that has come out of it. It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, Crown of Thorns was trending on Twitter during Holy Week.
Yeah, so there's a lot of good that has come out of it. And thankfully, it looks like a lot of it was spared. But at the same time, I mean, speaking as someone who has never visited the cathedral, I mourn the loss of not being able to see the real thing, if you will.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'll see pieces of the real thing, but there's something to say about being able to visit the cathedral as it was, and understanding that it has been renovated in the past. But there is a loss that I mourn because there are aspects of it that will never be the same. And that though you can have very faithful recreations, you'll never have the original structure of the roof, for example, which in itself was an engineering marvel.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, though, what is so comforting is that the big stained glass windows, the three main rose windows, were saved because one aspect that we've talked about on the podcast a lot is how architecture has this unique ability to span time and connect us to our predecessors.
Yeah, yeah.
So Bishop Barron talked about how, like, these are the same windows that St. Thomas Aquinas would have looked at when he walks into the cathedral.
That's amazing.
So in that way, when you walk into Notre Dame, you are connected to the long history of the church. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at the same window that St. Thomas Aquinas looked at.
Yeah.
And that ability for architecture to transcend time and be sacramental in that way is preserved. So I'm very happy about that. Because, you know, as we talk about so much on the podcast, our faith is incarnational, which means that those windows themselves are sacramental in nature because they reveal God. So the fact that they were not physically destroyed is something to be, in my opinion, very much celebrated, because it keeps that continuum of the faith, that they become a very visible and real sign of the fact that our faith transcends time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah, it was interesting. There was a Ross, I don't know how you pronounce it, like Douthat or Douthat, how you pronounce it, right, for the New York Times, published an article on the 15th, and there was a line that struck me where towards the end he says, you know, the cathedral will be rebuilt and the cross and the altar and much of the interior survived, and this is the part that hit me. He said, but all preservation is provisional. Whatever we're preserving now, whether it's, you know, really mundane maintenance or, like, you know, re-caulking the windows or something, or we're rebuilding, you know, the Notre Dame, is in some way it's provisional, like it's a means to an end. It's not where we're going to end up eventually, but it's such a potent signal for, like, stirring your heart in the right way, and that we will rebuild it, but ultimately it's not about the rebuilt church. The church is a means of, like, drawing our heart closer to God and preparing us for Mass and for the Eucharist and for, like, Christ's actual sacrifice. And part of me hates that this happened, but the part of me that recognizes that it happened at the beginning of Holy Week is, like, God has no, you know, he's not going to pull any punches. He was like, if I'm going to burn down this building, then I'm going to make sure it happens in an effective time. So.
Yeah, I mean, nothing goes to waste for God, for sure.
Yeah.
I think that, interestingly enough, the fact that it did burn down signals that this building is not a relic of the past, but it's truly a living, ongoing church. Because I think what a lot of people maybe thought of it as is a museum.
Yeah.
That you preserve because it's this artifact that is so precious, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that it burned down and that is now in need of rebuilding,
yeah,
in my mind, is actually, like you said, a good thing. It's an opportunity to show that this building is alive and it will continue to evolve and to change and to have additions to it. because it's not an artifact of the past, but it's a living thing. So I think in that way, the fire is a perfect way to exemplify that.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were the crossing of the nave and the center right in front of the altar, the spire was like 250 tons of oak, totally crashed down. So that part of the church is, there are a few massive holes in the roof, but the altar area didn't get crushed. And there's some really epic photos of like looking down the nave into this, you know, lit cross behind the altar with crushed stuff in front of you. And there's some very epic photos that everyone can go see.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, people are making, like, so I read an article, I forgot where it was, but where people were kind of trying to draw symbolism out of this and basically saying that this is a sign of how we have allowed our tradition, especially in Europe, how Europe has really allowed the Christian tradition and the connection to Christendom to really erode. And that all of a sudden this fire becomes an opportunity to reawaken the fact that there's this entire tradition that their society is built on that needs to be reconnected to. So just before this fire happened, about a year ago, the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris was making an appeal to people for donations to renovate the church because it was falling apart. So though now you have all this money pouring in, it is sad, in my opinion, that it took a fire to awaken people to want to give money to this cause, because they were in dire need of money and they were not even close to having enough to do a decent job renovating it. And it took the thing burning down for people to realize that it was such a treasure that needed to be kept. So I do think there's a lesson here that we need to give value to these buildings, give value to architecture, and realize their meaning and significance before we're faced with this dire situation where basically the whole thing was in danger of burning down. Because just a year ago, it was just in as much need in a way, and people were okay to just passively let it decay because it wasn't, you know, going up in flames. So in other words, the attention it's getting today was because it burned, but that attention has been there, has been needed for a couple of years now. You know, and going back to the very beginning of this podcast, we mentioned how Notre Dame was almost demolished back in the 1800s. Again, because people moved on. The times moved on. People were interested in other things. And we wouldn't even have Notre Dame right now if it wasn't for people that were wanting to save it and wanting to draw attention to its inherent value and its inherent meaning that the church has. So I just, once again, to me, what it's reminding me of is the importance of architecture, the importance of transcendent architecture especially, and how it can mean so much more than just a bunch of stones piled on top of each other. But if we just kind of let our buildings go by the wayside, you know, we're not going to have fires with every church.
Yeah.
We're not going to have cataclysmic events to remind us how important things are.
Yeah. And totally. I read a few opinion pieces or op-eds where there was someone who was writing and they lived in France and they could see, I forget what platform it was on, but this guy could basically see Notre Dame from his window. He'd get out every day and he would, you know, kind of silently salute the building as he leaves. Mm-hmm. And it was a thing that it was never lost on him how powerful the building was, how beautiful the building was. And he never mentioned that he prays or that he goes to church or that he's Catholic at all.
Right.
But there's this thing that has such a presence in the city that all the people identify with it. It makes you wonder why we don't invest more or why we don't recognize the good that's already being done. It's important not to say we never do, because sometimes
some
it's done well.
Do, right.
But it's important to recognize how powerful it can be, where you can have an entire city that's largely secular that it may or may not be talking about what the church is for, what its like purpose for being is, like what the sort of ontological roots of the building may be and why it's designed the way it's designed, and that Jesus is at the heart of it. That may never be in the discussion, but it's an amazing piece of architecture, and it's almost like that's enough to sustain you through like the, you know, the desert of faith. And it's a beautiful thing that it can do that. Like, it's right. not a book, it's not a text, it's not a piece of music. It's something that can just be there, and it never has to be maintained, or like music has to be replayed or like read again. But the building can just be there. So it's both good and bad. Like, yes, it can be neglected, but it also has the ability to allow you to somehow weather the storm in a very patient way through the secularism of France.
Very true.
It was also, it makes me wonder why, or think about how, at least in architecture, people talk about museum quality underscore. There's like museum quality lighting, museum quality acoustics, or theater quality this or that.
Yeah.
I long for a day where all of the extremes of the spectrum are church quality.
Yeah.
It's like, man, that's crazy expensive. That's like church quality lighting, that's church quality acoustics, that's like, that's the hype, because that's what matters most, instead of all of these other, you know, secular institutions.
Agreed.
A lot of them are great and have really good reasons for being, and they're doing lots of good stuff, but it makes me think of a future where any church that gets burned down or damaged is seen as a travesty, because there's such excellence put into every bit of it.
Right. So. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think for me, hearing that the museum was the new cathedral made me want to become an architect, because I said, I want the cathedral to be the cathedral.
I want the cathedral to be the new cathedral. Yeah, that's the future. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that's, you know, that's the jumping off point for us. And we'll continue this conversation and continue to see how we can make new Notre Dames, not just in Paris, but all over the world. You know, how do we go from here, so that maybe, you know, 200 years in the future, there will be a church in America that people will be mourning over when it's on fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the goal, to make beautiful, transcendent buildings that everyone recognizes for their beauty.
One little tidbit before we leave, it's kind of fun for you to imagine. I was wondering how they're going to rebuild it and how they're going to get all of this information, you know, collated together to be able to reestablish what all the architectural details were like, and just how they're going to make it happen again if they choose to recreate it exactly as it was. And I saw an article that was talking about how a video game, Assassin's Creed Unity, it's set, part of it is set in France, and there was someone on the Ubisoft team who is a level designer for video games. This also is like dream job. If I ever like quit architecture proper, I'm gonna go design, like rebuild famous historical churches for video game companies. There's a lady whose job was for 2 years to basically look at all of the historical documentation and detail the cathedral as precisely as possible, down to like texture maps for individual stones. So for 2 years, she basically built a digital replica of Notre Dame. And this is in this video game, so I'm gonna like go buy Assassin's Creed and play it so I can see what it's like. But it's pretty interesting that we live in a time where video game development is so precise that someone chose to set it in France. I think it's actually during the construction of the cathedral. I may be wrong about that, but if you just look up Assassin's Creed Notre Dame, you can see photos of the video game, and that's kind of an interesting, you know, intersection of contemporary technology and, you know, gaming culture and the rebuilding of a famous church.
Absolutely.
So.
All right. Well, contribute to the rebuild of Notre Dame. Make sure that you...
I got a cool 100 mil to add to 600 mil.
Make sure you advocate for the beauty of churches and pray for all the people involved in the... both in the putting out of the fire, but also in the reconstruction, because they'll need it.
Yep.
All right. We are out.
Done.